It's time once again for Wonder Pod, episode 123, the Back to College edition. No, I'm not going to put that on the banner, but it sounds good because that's where Glacinator's at. Hey, but and he's here. Yes, see, joining us
surprisingly with internet.
Yeah,
it's like magic.
He's the only.
It's like I'm in a Disney movie right now.
He's the only one on his college campus that has it.
It's magical. It's a magical experience.
Are there a lot of students back that early?
Yeah, surprisingly. They had everyone sort of file in today or tomorrow, even though school starts Monday.
So they want you all there and accounted for.
Yeah.
Before classes start. Mm-hmm. If you live in the dorms.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, if you live in a dirtbag apartment like I did, they don't give a fuck.
Not at all.
They don't. They just take your money. They don't give a shit if you show up to class either. May I explain why it took me far longer than it's. Let's see, Glacinator is a junior.
Yes.
And he are 20-ish, about the closer to 21 probably than 20.
No, closer to 20.
Oh, okay. Okay. So he's just turned 20. At that point in my college career, I was still majoring in drinking. And yes, for those of you, for you moralists at home, that means I was drinking before I was 21. Bite me.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
People do that?
College student with a fake ID? What the fuck?
What?
So you have my respect and kudos for being a junior at the proper time rather than me. It took me a couple, 3 years longer than most to get out of school. I wouldn't trade it for anything. My parents might. Maybe. But back to school, back to internet. Also joining us this week, as he usually does, is John.
Hey, everybody. And what I've found out that today is National Rum Day. So to celebrate, I'm having a fine rum and coke.
Very nice. National, like, is that Canada's National Rum Day or just National Rum Day in general?
I have no idea, but Roger told me in a text after work. So I think in our respective homes, we're both drinking rum tonight.
Well, that's good. I tend to take Roger's word for it. It's National Rum Day. Piss on it. We're declaring it, even down here.
If somebody knows, it's Roger.
Oh, is he like me, the useless trivia guy from hell?
No, he just loves rum a lot.
Oh. I do, but it doesn't love me too much anymore. It and tequila. I like them. They don't like me too much. They do not treat me well, whether I have one or two too many. So, hey, let's try talking about video games. I have this ESP sensation that none of us played too many new things this week. We're in that kind of lull. Let's start with College Boy. What have you been playing this week, Glacinator?
Well, I haven't been really playing much this week, but I do have a few games from last week that I forgot to mention when I was on my trip. And I was playing some iPhone games, and I picked up Dead Trigger. And Dead Trigger is, I mean, get on the App Store, and it's basically a zombie survival game, first-person shooter. And it was only 99 cents, so I figured, what the heck, I can blow a dollar. If it sucks, it doesn't really matter that much. And I was actually pleasantly surprised. Basically, what you do is you have, like, this sort of overworld map, and you get missions in certain areas of the map. And so you click on that part of the map, and you enter this level. And in the levels, you can do different missions like gathering supplies or finding ammo to guns or going to evacuating a certain part of the building of zombies or something. Just different things, but they're all in like the same major levels. And while the levels are the same a lot of the time, it's okay because the way that the zombies spawn, they really surprise you in this game. I mean, there are times where I've actually jumped because all of a sudden, my screen will be flashing red because there's a zombie literally right behind me, and I don't notice because they sort of slowly emerge out of windows and crevices and cracks and stuff that you don't really look at. It controls okay. I mean, you're going to have some problems since it's on iPhone, and it can be a little cramped. It's probably better to play on iPad. I haven't tried it on iPad, but it's decent on iPhone. Your hands can get a little annoyed, but it's not too bad. And for the most part, even because the controls are sort of off, it actually makes it a little bit more realistic. Because I was thinking about it, if I was in an actual zombie apocalypse, I wouldn't be getting headshot after headshot consecutively. I'd probably be missing a lot. And you do miss a lot because it takes it takes a little bit of patience to aim. You have to stop moving, aim your shot, and then just shoot him in the head to kill him. And so that does take a little bit of practice and time, and it feels more realistic because you're not just running and gunning all over the place. I mean, you can do that. It's probably not going to be the best idea for you because, as I said, the zombies sort of creep up on you and get you. It's only 99 cents on the App Store, so I would definitely suggest picking it up. I mean, you have your usual in-game purchases that, like, to get better weapons, you can buy the weapons with real money to get them faster. It takes a while to level up, but that's how they make their money, and it doesn't annoy me that much because the game's still fun with the basic pistol, basically. So, yeah, that's what I've been playing this week, or last week, prolonged.
What, you're not going to mention our escapades in the game we no longer mention?
Oh, I can still mention, even though we don't want to mention it?
Well, here's the thing. The only one thing I want to bring up, and then you can add some if you'd like, we're just going to now call it the game we no longer mention because I think it makes Pat laugh. I think the most fun I had on the multiplayer server for that particular game this week was our dungeon crawl. That felt like the original days, like when we had it on my cheesy little box, and then when you originally hosted the server before it became this worldwide phenomenon. That felt like it was a lot more fun. Just pure unadulterated fun. You're not worried about building stuff. You're not worried about other people. You're just down there in a hole hunting skeletons, trying to stay away from spiders. So I had a lot of fun with that. I mean, I had a lot of fun in general on there this week. Blue screen crashes and bad lag and all, but I'm really glad we did take the time to explore that, because it was, even though we both had building projects going on and that, you know, you with your cathedral and other stuff, that definitely felt like old school Minecraft to me, you know, back before all these updates and things.
Do you like how the underground experience is now compared to how it used to be, or do you like the old way better?
I think it's kind of 50-50. You know how you used to be able to pretty much explore a whole cavern, and unless you did something stupid, you'd live.
Yeah.
You know, like me falling in the lava, stuff like that. Now, there's much more potential for your death to be out of your hands. And I kind of like that edge to it. I noticed when we quit, and you know, you went back to your little place, and I went back to mine, I was sweating. Like, I'd been all tensed up because we're just, like, down there in this hole, you know. And you died that one time, and I had to go run after your crap when I had no idea where you were.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think I like it better than the old stuff. It's just more now you got to be more cognizant of other stuff than just, shit, what's the word I'm looking for? The natural terrain obstacles. Mm-hmm. You know, before, you know, you might see one creeper, and that was it. You get in certain areas, and you'll run into, like, five creepers in a row, and you're not going to get away from them. You know, or you're not going to survive all five of them exploding if they do it one after another.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's more fun, I think. I mean, there's a small part of me that misses the old, hey, we're done in an hour, and we found a bunch of golden diamonds. Let's go back to the top and find something else to do. Because that, we never... How much of that cavern do you think we explored?
The one that we did this week? Oh, 1%.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
I mean, that's my main problem with how it generates terrain now, is that you can never really finish exploring. And that's a good thing, but at the same time, it's sort of annoying because there's no really concrete wall or anything that you can stop at. Back in the old terrain generation, it'd be like you could explore a cavern completely, fill it up with torches, go down a path, be like, okay, this is a dead end, let's work the other way. It was a lot more elegant, and now it's sort of hectic. It's two different play styles, but I guess I prefer the elegant way better.
Like I said, I'm split down the middle. I like the chaoticness of it, because you mm-hmm. never really know whether you've done it or not. But at the same time, I'm split right down the middle. Part of me likes the chaotic, part of me likes the simple elegance. I don't think I really swing one way or the other in total. Anything else you'd like to say about that before we take up the whole show with and get in trouble again?
No, just that I finished my cathedral, so that's about it.
Look forward to a video on that as soon as the school year gets settled down, and I think the 1.32 update was supposed to fix some lag issues. I'm not buying it. I will do a video of the cathedral for Wonderpod Online Until then, you can watch the video I already did showing various things. Okay, sorry, John. That's it. I'm not even going to mention it, what I've been playing. Now, good sir, what have you been playing this week?
Well, I'm not going to take up too much time because I really did not play anything new this week. Still playing Dead Space 2. I'm on chapter 11 of what I think is 14 chapters, so I'm sort of on the home stretch. The game still impresses me how beautiful it is and how well designed, just visually, how, you know, it's just stunning, all the different things that you get to see. Like, there's still lots of corridors and tight spaces, which is, you know, kind of standard for to keep the suspense up, I guess, you know, not a whole lot of room to move and run. But it's just a really well-designed game. There's in the places where I'm kind of creeping around now, there's, I mentioned before how there's a bit more use of color and some different terrain. I'm actually back in familiar terrain because I'm back on the ship from Dead Space 1, but what's interesting is that the whole ship was quarantined, so everything is all wrapped up in all this sterile wrap and white plastic wrap, and there's paint all over the place from being knocked over, and footprints everywhere. It's just really, really cool. You know, you remember revisiting some of these areas, and it's you know, it's straight from the first game. So you kind of traverse through some of the key locations on the ship, and then you have, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it before, but Isaac in the game has these sort of hallucinations, these flashbacks to what happened before, and also these appearances by his dead girlfriend who kind of torments him through the whole game. But, you know, so you'll have there's one memorable spot in Dead Space 1 where you get this big worm-looking kind of creature kind of busts out of the wall and grabs your foot and drags you along, and you have to shoot it and stuff. That you have a hallucination where that happens again, but then, you know, before you get a chance to really do anything about it, it stops. So it's kind of reminding you of things you've done before, and trying, you know, because you're anticipating it, of course, because it's, you know, you're in that, you remember it. I was in this spot when this happened, and yeah, it's pretty cool that way. I am noticing now that the difficulty is really making itself apparent in that they're throwing a lot of big major enemies at me when I go into some of these kind of choke point rooms where I have to fend off, you know, four and five at a time. And of course, you know, with a lot less ammo, I'm spending all my money in the store buying more ammo because it's, you know, the drops are not as plentiful and stuff. And I guess maybe I'm not being strategic enough in my shots, but I'm spending all my dough on ammo rather than upgrades a little bit, you know, as much as I should maybe. And yeah, I mean, it's stressful, but it's fun, you know. It's kind of the point, right? And I played a little bit of Mario Land 2, which, and when I say a little, I really mean like only one or two levels. I have to say that the graphics are kind of impressive for the old Game Boy. As I mentioned before, it was one of the few Mario games that I didn't play, and yeah, it's really not that bad. I mean, the overworld map is kind of pixely and stuff. It's not that detailed, but when you actually get into the levels, you know, especially compared to Mario Land 1, it's just miles ahead of that, and so it's pretty cool. Mario doesn't seem like he really stops on a dime like he does in most games. He kind of has I'm not sure it was a skid, but kind of not as responsive as, I guess, as in some games. And maybe that's just me having to get used to it, I guess, but it's he handles a little bit differently than he does in most Mario games, which is not a bad thing. It's just something I noticed that was different. And to be honest, guys, that's really all I have to say. It's kind of a repeat of last week, so I'll hand it over to you, Bruce.
Okay, to wrap up the game that we're no longer allowed to mention. I played on the multiplayer server. It's got some issues, and I feared that just slapping single player onto multiplayer and multiplayer and coding this and coding that while making it easier for Mojang was not going to make it easier for the players. Tried to start a new single player world and find a village on my own that wasn't a desert village. I don't think it's possible. I'm not 100% sure what's going on with that game some days. It's a resource eater, too. it may wear me out to the point where I go on a hiatus from it again, which will be a godsend to the people on the podcast. I also played some Team Fortress 2. Now, I decided to break this up. We're going to discuss a little later Team Fortress 2 again, but I got back into it due to the new co-op that's coming out, or, well, as of this recording, it is out. And I did some training with it. And for those of you who don't know what Team Fortress 2 is, it's a long time out first-person shooter, very cartoony, very crude and humorous. And I've forgotten how much fun it was. Now, I didn't get online and play with randoms because I'm an asshole and don't like doing that. So I didn't. I played training with the bots. And it's still just as fun. I mean, the older that game gets, it just, the fun level never seems to change. I mean, if you really, really liked it when it first came out, you're really, really probably going to like it today, which is impressive in this here today, gone tomorrow video game industry. What else? There was one other thing I was going to say about it. Oh, it's one of those games that you can kind of plop into any time. Like I said, later on in the show, we'll talk about the new co-op. Calling it co-op's a stretch. I also replayed, and I think I started this last week and talked about it on the show, Saboteur. I just love sandbox games, and I get really into them. And when I'm not feeling great, not feeling like working on anything video game-wise or website-wise or whatever, I just like plopping it in and just kind of vegetating in front of it, blowing up Nazis. It's perfect for that. It was, you know, it's a little sad to me the pandemic as a studio is gone. It was really great title. And it's a lot of fun to still play. It'll be one of those ones that even after the 360's gone and the Xbox, whatever is next, comes along. I'll probably still pop it in every once in a while or replay through the campaign again just for shits and giggles. I also played some more Armored Princess. I mostly played Armored Princess this week so that I could show you how the combat works, because I've talked about it a few times here on the show and thought, you know, I did a piss poor job explaining what the combat looks like. Hey, I've got the ability to record videos on PC. Let's try it out. My video editing skills blow chunks, but you get the general idea. And you can see that at WonderPod Online, our website, which I'll bug you about again at the end of the show. That's all I've been playing too. Been a down week. I was hoping it was going to pick up next week because I was going to pick up Guild Wars 2, the new MMO, the latest MMO when it comes out, but yeah, financially, I don't think I'm going to be able to swing it, which kind of sucks because then I'm going to be behind some friends I know that are going to play it. But I will be talking about Guild Wars 2. Looks like the best hope in the MMO market. Yeah, let me try that again. The best hope in the MMO market that's not fucking pandas. I mean, come on, World of Warcraft has finally jumped the damn shark. And speaking of jumping the shark, that actually moves us into our discussion topic really perfectly. I make no secret that I'm a fan of Jim Sterling. I also make no secret that I'm pretty sure there's people I know who are not. But his Jimquisition video series this week touched on how Mario might be getting a little stale, as it were, and how even though it's still fun and it's still good quality, the newer Mario games aren't necessarily, don't necessarily change as much as they used to. Since I have two console guys, for the most part, John plays PC, don't be hating. And so does Glaze. I'm digging a fucking hole right there. Anyway, I figured we'd discuss this. And here's my two questions for you gentlemen. One, John, we'll start with you. One, do you think Mario has gone stale at this point? Or are you okay with the same thing over and over again with maybe a few minor touches since it's fucking Mario?
In some ways, I'll say yes. I don't think... it almost seems like there's a couple of streams of Mario games. Like, the new Super Mario Brothers stuff seems to be really repetitive and not that, you know, not that inspired, if you will. the level designs tend to be a little easier, and I think it's, and that is by, you know, design, for lack of a better word, for accessibility. And of course, it's translated into a zillion sales. But then you have sort of the Mario Galaxy, Mario Land 3D kind of stream, where they're really trying different things and really trying different perspectives on an old formula. It's still Mario, but it's making you think about things in different ways. Now, Mario Land 3D wasn't particularly, super difficult, but it was definitely fresh. And while Galaxy 2 was, arguably more Mario Galaxy, it was, that's okay because Mario Galaxy 2 had was superior in a lot of ways. I thought the boss fights and stuff were a lot better and that kind of thing. So in some ways, yes, in some ways, no, if I can be a little wishy-washy in my answer.
Oh, come on. Did you hear the fucking waffle dance from hell I did on his cavern question 5 minutes ago? Of course you could be split down the middle. Nobody since Clinton has waffle danced that well. Two people will get that. I'm just going for the fucking totally obscure jokes anymore. Glacinator. I was going to do a younger joke, but that's kind of getting worn out too. Do you think Mario has kind of become stale? Or are you like John, kind of maybe yes, maybe no?
I'm not sure if stale is necessarily the right word. Maybe just overused more than it should be. Because Mario games are never really, you're never going to, oh, that was such a terrible Mario game. It's either it's a really great Mario game or it was just okay. I mean, they're never terrible. But I can see where people are coming from where they do call it stale. I did an extensive review on Mario 3D Land when that came out. And while I like the idea of it, I had a lot of problems with how, maybe not necessarily easy it was, but how, I guess, redundant it was in some points and how much potential it could have had to do other things. And some of my favorite Mario games out there are the ones that have incorporated good level design along with a good environment. Those being Mario Sunshine and Super Mario Land with the cool overworld. And I feel like if Nintendo or Mario wants to keep innovating stuff, they need to keep that sort of innovation in terms of the environment of the game itself. Super Mario, New Super Mario Bros. 2 is coming out, which I'm getting tomorrow on Sunday. And it's following in the same sort of line of all we're doing right now is focusing on the levels. And people forget that Mario is more than just the levels. I mean, it was originally just the levels, but Mario's become so much more now, with sports games and, Paper Mario. There's so much more than Mario Universe that they can use and go off of to make Mario games feel more fleshed out as a whole. And so I think if Nintendo keeps going in the direction of Sunshine, it will be better games in the future.
Now, we can all probably agree that Mario is a cultural phenomenon. It's moved past, like, say, shooter franchise number 5, which probably has a definite shelf life, no matter how long bloated publisher dudes try and keep it alive. So with that in mind, Glace, let me ask you this as a follow-up question. Would a complete redesign or possibly a Mario goes away off the rehab scenario, that's right, I said it, do Nintendo any good, or because he's kind of a cultural phenomenon, would they be better to struggle through changing him with him still out in the open, if that makes any goddamn sense?
It would be a gamble, but I don't think Mario needs to go away himself. I mean, because Mario really is a blank slate. He has a little bit of personality. I mean, he says woohoo and he jumps around on stuff, but he doesn't really talk or anything. He's like Link in that you really are sort of Mario when you play. And so he doesn't really need to go away. I don't hate Mario. He's not annoying or anything. It's just maybe the gameplay is getting a little overused. I think it'd be interesting if they sort of went, I mean, this is going way out there. Nintendo would never do this, but if they tried to do a sort of Mario / Mirror's Edge hybrid where it was first person, but it was still a platformer, and it was still sort of Mario-y, I think that'd be really interesting. I mean, Mario's already done sports games. He's already done RPGs. He's already done all sorts of stuff. So the only other game type I can really think of, I guess, is either, you know, FPS or what else is it? Or FPS. That's really all he hasn't done. Maybe adventure game. But
so you
it.
Would be more into a Mirror's Edge first person perspective type game than, say, just a complete overhaul of his standard platform.
Yeah, the problem isn't the characters. The problem is the gameplay. That's the issue.
Okay. How about you, John? Hiatus, redesign, new direction, change his name to Fred. I don't know.
I think a hiatus wouldn't do him any harm. There have been a lot of Mario games. After, you know, like if you think about like the 64 era, there was only one Mario game in that generation, if I recall correctly. And the GameCube only had one. You know, the Wii has had, in the lifetime of the Wii, we've had two, plus Mario Land 3D, plus New Super Mario Brothers. Oh, and we also had New Super Mario Brothers Wii. We also had, and now New Super Mario Brothers 2 for 3DS is coming out, I think, this weekend. It's a lot of Mario platforming in a couple of years span. So, I mean, and that's not including all the other Mario, you know, franchises that we've already discussed, you know, the sports and all that kind of stuff. So, I don't think it would do them any harm. The only problem is that Mario makes money, and so, well, that seems a little bit unlikely. As far as a redesign goes, I don't think you want to fix what ain't broke, because just think about the, you know, superhero movies. When the further that most those movies deviate from the source material, the stuff that worked, the thing that people are familiar with, the worse off it gets. I mean, they might have small tweaks to the Spider-Man costume and that kind of thing, but they don't mess with it too much. Superman, like, they really, I don't think they really want to go too far. You know, they don't want to straight from the blue and red with Superman. You know, it's fixing what ain't broke. So,
well, let's roll something in here with Mario. As far as scarcity goes, like you're talking about, you know, make him more scarce essentially. And I thought we'd seen more of him during the Wii generation than we had Cube and definitely 64. And this is going to be a little bit of a weird, what else is new, presentation or metaphor, but bear with me. Half-Life 3 was rumored again. It was seen on a sheet of paper for Gamerscom, which is a gaming convention in Cologne, Germany. And people started shitting themselves again, as usual. Then Valve said, we're not showing something. No Half-Life 3. Yada, yada. What my gut was telling me with this is that if Half-Life 3 ever does show, and it isn't just balls out perfect, it's going to make the Mass Effect 3 uproar look like nothing. My point in this, bringing it back to Mario, is that possible if they make him too scarce? Or has he achieved a perch in gamingdom where that's not possible? Glacinator, what do you think? If they do decide to go ahead and put him on hiatus for a while.
What exactly are you saying? Like, how?
Well, like I said, it was a weird intro, and I just kind of wanted to work it in because I wanted to make fun of Half-Life 3.
Like, would he still be a viable character if he?
No, if they make him too scarce and the game isn't perfect or isn't 100% Mario, is the potential outrage like we saw with Mass Effect 3, or we would see with Half-Life 3 if it ever shows the light of day, and isn't awesome. Or is Mario beyond that at this point?
I mean, I think Mario can go. I mean, if they really need to, Mario could go away for a while. I mean, Nintendo has enough IPs that they can do other stuff with other things while they work on a Mario game. I mean, I know, like John said about the N64 days, you only had Mario 64, and then on the GameCube, you really only had Sunshine. And the thing is, with GameCube, you had Sunshine, but you had more Mario games, but they weren't necessarily Mario. You had Wario Land, the GameCube Wario Land, and you had Luigi's Mansion. It was still Mario, but it wasn't, you know, a Mario game. So there have been times where Mario hasn't really been around that much, but he's still been sort of there in the sort of Mario universe. So he can go away for a while. I think it would be okay.
So you don't think that if he came back, I'm screwing this all up. So you don't think there's the potential for the gamerdom rage that we've seen with other games that didn't end the way gamers wanted or didn't come out the way gamers wanted with Mario?
Unless Nintendo drastically revamps everything and it's like Mario is now a space pirate and he fights gorillas or something just ridiculous. I mean, because you know what you're going to get with Mario, and that's what I'm saying. If they go away for a while and come back, you still are going to vaguely know what's going to be in the game.
Ah, okay. Yeah, well, actually, Mario did start life fighting monkeys.
Monkeys, yeah.
I honestly wonder how many gamers today even know that. That should be the litmus test. Where did Mario first appear? Hint, it wasn't fucking Super Mario Brothers. John, if you made any sense out of that, and like I said, I was trying to take a cheap shot at Half-Life 3 and it blew up my face horribly. No surprise, given how my week's been going. Do you, first off, understand anything I'm saying? Second off, do you think there's any potential for Mass Effect 3 like outrage if Mario is gone too long or changed too much, or is he too much Mario for that to happen?
Well, I would think that there would be some pretty lofty expectations if there was a Mario hiatus. The transition from, of course, NES to SNES and then to 64, like every generation where there was only a singular Mario game that came out, especially when it was a launch title. I mean, the expectations of it, what are you going to see? What's new and new about this system that's beyond what we had before. I mean, Mario, to use your phrase, the litmus test for make or break a system. So I think if there was a hiatus, yeah, there'd definitely be this, what rabbit are they going to pull out of their hat, given all this time they've had to develop something. I think you got a bit of that with Mario Galaxy 1. There was quite a lull between Sunshine as far as console, straight up Mario games. There was quite a lull between Sunshine and Galaxy 1, and for me, I thought I had some pretty high expectations, and I thought they were for the most part very very much fulfilled because they really went some different directions, and it really didn't take that long for Mario, for Galaxy 2 to come out. Didn't take, and then they, had the Mario Brothers Wii again. I'm kind of repeating myself a little bit here, but yeah, I think there would be.
So you think there's potential there for outrage if the fans don't get what they want, essentially.
In 2012, yes, because there's a lot more ways for people to complain than there was. Once upon a time when all you had was, angry letters and schoolyard bitching rather than, a complete worldwide contact through the internet.
Well, as badly as I just funged up this segment by trying to use Half-Life 3 as a metaphor, that's going to be the killer for Valve. They had just better hope that game is balls out perfect. Or they are
You should call it the Duke Nukem effect.
Well, I think we already got one game that's going to be a Duke Nukem of this generation. It's going to make John cry if that does.
I'm already crying.
There's several. I don't know. Actually, if one was going to get the Duke Nukem title, it's probably going to be Half-Life 3 because that's been
longer than this one.
Yeah. I don't know. If I were Valve, I'm not sure I'd want to release it at this point. Fuck, the expectations are just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Audience at home, I use an RSS reader to read news stories to put together the show, and you should have seen it the minute that rumor hit. It's on a piece of paper. It's going to be shown at the Valve booth at Gamerscom. It was like fucking everywhere I fucking looked. It's real. It's real. Oh wait, no, it's not. It's like, oh fucking hell. And the thing is I kind of feel somewhat sorry for the people who are hyped for it. Because they must have ulcers at this point. it's real, it's not. It's real, it's not. It's real, it's not. Fuck, it's another Left 4 Dead game.
That's right.
So that's been our discussion topic. It's time for Uncle G. He has another question. It's an interesting question, and it's a video game question. Take it away, Uncle G.
Greetings, WonderPod. Technically challenged Uncle G here again. And I think Audio Master G is buggered off once more. He said something about his lease and his landlord and some crap like that. I don't know. So, this is what I'm going to get you guys to do. What I would like you to do is recast all of the characters in Star Wars that you can think of with famous, iconic video game characters. So, who would play the part as Chewbacca? Who would be Luke Skywalker? Or Anakin Skywalker / Darth Vader, for that matter? Obi-Wan Kenobi? Yoda? The list goes on. Hey, you can even ask yourself, who would be a good Jar Jar Binks? I don't care. Have fun with this one. Entertain the audience. I'm out of here.
Hey, Uncle G. So, look, sounds like you want a casting call for the Star Wars series with some video game characters. So, no problem. We sent a little list around just to make sure that we're all consistent with the same characters, focusing on the original trilogy. So before I get to my list, which some of them are safe and some of them are hopefully get a few chuckles, but. I had a couple of honorable mentions of other characters in the universe, Star Wars universe, that popped in my head. I thought of the characters from Journey as the Jawas, those hooded guys on Tatooine. And also Kratos from God of War would be a pretty cool Darth Maul, the double wielding of all his weapons and that kind of thing. So, this popped in my head. But anyway, to the original trilogy. So for Luke, I had Link from Zelda. Easily, pretty standard fare there. He's a boy from humble beginnings on the farm. He grows up, becomes the great hero. For Leia, I had picked Lara Croft. I mean, she can handle a gun. She can take care of herself in a fight, and would look pretty damn good in a metal bikini. For Darth Vader, I had a little bit of trouble coming up with a good bad guy for that role. Just that kind of fits the Darth Vader character, but Ganon is tall, dark, evil, and wields a pretty good sword, so why not? For Obi-Wan Kenobi, I picked Captain John Price from the Modern Warfare series. He taught me how to be a good soldier, and he teaches by example, so I thought he was pretty good. Bruce should like this one. For Yoda, I picked Piggy from Enslaved. A little guy who runs around and gives you and helps you out in kind of backward ways. For the Emperor, I chose Tom Nook, who's that seedy, all-controlling raccoon bastard from Animal Crossing.
Yes.
who pulls the strings from behind the scenes.
Validation for Animal Crossing for Glacier.
That was a pop.
I stood up
there
and applauded.
I liked Piggy. I didn't even think of him. That was a fucking good one. I got to give you props on that.
Thank you. So, just moving on. For C-3PO, if she could be mobile, I would pick GLaDOS from the Portal series, because she definitely says some pretty funny stuff and could really complain like C-3PO does. I had two choices for R2-D2. The obvious one would be Clank from Ratchet & Clank.
Damn it.
But the other one I kind of wanted to go with was a Big Daddy from BioShock. Mostly because he's a Big Daddy is incredibly loyal, though he's misunderstood, and he will stick you with a sharp thing when he's prompted. So I thought he was a pretty good choice, even though he's a little oversized. Han Solo was Nathan Drake from Uncharted. Nathan Drake is pretty much Indiana Jones, so if Harrison Ford can make the switch, then why not Nathan Drake? Chewbacca is Donkey Kong, duh, though again, Yoshi works for a good sidekick, too. For Lando, I had real trouble with him, but I just figured who's cool and who's badass, so Duke Nukem, so, why not? Boba Fett, Solid Snake from Metal Gear Solid, is a total badass. Jabba the Hutt, I was struggling with him, too, so I picked Krang from the Ninja Turtles games. And for the Ewoks, I figured just thousands of Sackboys from the Little Big Planet series, or maybe Lemmings. So there you go. That's my list. I'll hand it off now to Glace.
Wait a minute. You're the one that told me to do Admiral Akbar, and you forgot him, didn't you?
Oh, shoot. He wasn't in our list, Sherman, that you sent out to me.
Yeah, it was. He was retitled as Admiral Snack Bar because it made me laugh.
That's right. Oh, crap. Let me think about it, and I'll come back to you.
We'll come back to you. All right, Glace, give us your list.
All right. Well, for Luke, like John, I picked Link for the obvious reasons, plus the color green works as well. For Leia, I picked Zelda, and specifically Tetra from Wind Waker, because they're both sort of bossy, and you know they can get on your nerves. They know how to handle themselves. For Darth Vader, I picked Ganondorf as well. I mean, the trifecta is there. There's so many parallels between Zelda and Star Wars, it's ridiculous. For Obi-Wan, I chose the old version of Solid Snake. I had a hard time with that, and I figured they're both pretty old and badass, so why not? For Yoda, I really did not know what to put at all. So I chose the midget baby NPC villagers from Minecraft, just because I want to see a recut of Star Wars with the NPC villagers as Yoda talking backwards.
That's fucking awesome.
For the Emperor, I chose GLaDOS, just because, you know, they're both evil and overpowering. For C-3PO, I chose Fee from Skyward Sword. You know, they're both sort of helpers. They're robots. They're both sort of quirky, and they get on your nerves a little bit. For R2-D2, I chose Claptrap from Borderlands. They're pretty much the same character, and they roll around the same way, and I mean, if R2-D2 could talk, he'd probably talk like Claptrap. They even sound the same. For Han Solo, I chose Falco. I mean, they're both pilots. They're both douchebags that I'd punch in the face. For Chewie, this is weird. I chose Banjo-Kazooie. And I chose that because Banjo is a bear, Chewie is sort of a bear, and Chewbacca sort of sounds like Kazooie a little bit. I know that neither of them really make sense to us. Chewie's like, ah. And then Banjo-Kazooie is like, so they both have that weird sort of voice that makes no sense to you. For Lando, I chose Sergeant Johnson from Halo. I feel like sort of the same person. I'm not sure if Sergeant Johnson had an awesome mustache or not, though. For Boba Fett, I chose Samus because they're both bounty hunters. That was too easy. For Jabba, I chose Wario because they're both fat slobs and I can see them sitting on piles of money. And for the Ewoks, I chose a bunch of toads, just because they run around and yell stuff, and that's what they both do. For Akbar, I chose Peppy Hare from Star Fox, just because I think Peppy Hare does say it's a trap at least once in that game. Oh, and you also said maybe Jar Jar Binks. I would definitely choose Navi for Jar Jar Binks. And that's my list.
I can't stand Jar Jar Binks. He shouldn't be on any list anywhere, the little
juke. Lacey, your Star Fox choice was good, because I picked Slippy the Toad.
I can't think of Slippy the same way after that Penny Arcade comic. It doesn't work for me anymore. As for me, Uncle G, in the immortal words of Monty Python, it's now time for something completely different. I fucked that up, but you get my point. I went for shit that made me laugh. Pure, selfish, unadulterated, as I said. Now for something completely different. I mean, it's just the ludicrous list is literally what I went for. Okay, Luke Skywalker, Duke Nukem. Leia, Bayonetta. Darth, I almost did what those guys did, and then I went, no, there's one I've got to put in here because it makes me laugh every time. Psycho Mantis from the Metal Gear Solid series.
Nice.
Obi-Wan Kenobi was a pain in the ass until I stopped and thought about it, and I went really old school, and I went probably slightly obscure. Prince Arthas from Warcraft 3. This is not World of Warcraft, MMO kiddies. This is the RTS. And before he became the Bitch King, also known as the Lich King, Prince Arthas was a good guy trying to save the world. And he was kind of torn and not really sure of himself like the young Obi-Wan Kenobi was. So I did kind of slip into the new new movies a little bit. Yoda. I went with Gnarl from Overlord. He is quite literally the evil Yoda. If you can't take my word for it, go Google search him. Gnarl Overlord. He's literally the evil fucking Yoda. It's great. The Emperor's where I put Ganondorf. he sounded perfect as the Emperor to me. It made me laugh. C-3PO. This one was a tough choice. I had Claptrap there at first, but then I remembered a very sarcastic slightly evil yet hilarious robot from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic RPG. HK-47 is who I put down as C-3PO. For R2-D2, I put Clank. For Han Solo, I put Dom from Gears of War, just because I'm a jackass. Chewie. He's not a sidekick, but I thought it'd be kind of funny to try and stuff him into the Millennium Falcon. I put Tank from Left 4 Dead. Lando Calrissian, I made Solid Snake from the Metal Gear Solid series. Boba Fett, I made Mega Man because it seemed like Samus Aran was just too easy, although I damn near went there. Jabba the Hutt, I'm pretty proud of. Jabba the Hutt will be recast as a Boomer from Left 4 Dead. The Ewoks would be the Overlord minions, all the colors, browns, yellows, greens. And Admiral Akbar, and this was a Homer pick, or also known as a really super selfish pick, mostly because I love the voice actor's voice, Admiral Anderson from the Mass Effect series. So there you go. Did you get one for Admiral Snackbar or not?
Yeah, Slippy the Toad.
Oh, that's what you meant by Slippy the Toad. Is Admiral Akbar. I stole that Admiral Snackbar thing from somewhere, or I read it somewhere else, and now I use it all the time. Yeah, my favorite's got to be the Boomer for Jabba the Hutt. Although HK-47 as C-3PO would be pretty cool, too. Yeah, Psycho Mantis makes sense, doesn't it? As Darth Vader, because he wears the... Do you know the Metal Gear Solid series well enough, Glaze, to know who Psycho Mantis is?
Yeah, okay.
I thought you did. But yeah, he kind of... Well, Ganondorf would have... I had Ganondorf there until I remembered Psycho Mantis. So, you know, John, the Overlord minions would also work very well for the Jawas.
It would, you know, yeah.
They'd be the most fucked up Jawas ever. Because they talk. Well, they have crude little catchphrases, they say.
That was a good game.
Oh, God. The second one was a little less fun, but still a riot. So there you have it, Uncle G. That's our recasting of Star Wars. Now, if some Star Wars / video game nerd would just get on making that into reality, it'd be hilarious. If nothing else, just animated. Use the Knights of the Old Republic game to do it. So we'll look forward to hearing from you next week, Uncle G. Okay, let's move on. A couple quick notes. First, after last week's news that the Last Guardian trademark had lapsed and been abandoned in the cold, comes word from Sony that they are, in fact, still working very hard at Team ICO to finish Last Guardian, and that they are working their way through technical problems. It has not been pushed to a PlayStation 4 project. In fact, it is still being developed for the PS3, and as Scott Rode, head of PlayStation Software Development, said in June, the game will ship when it's absolutely ready. All right, so John, okay, does that news give you more confidence in your Kitty Dragons, or are you still pretty down because they're being awfully ambiguous and vague?
Still kind of down, to be honest. I just want that thing done and out, and hopefully it's as, you know, it's the whole anticipation thing. Hopefully it's as good as my brain thinks it's going to be. But I'll tell you though, I'm not going to be one of those guys who plays it and then defends it to the end just because, you know, they wanted it to be so good for so long and so badly. I'll still criticize it, but I do hope it's as good as I hope.
I think we're all more gun-shy about long-term projects after Duke Nukem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right to say that, you know, if it sucks, I'm going to say it sucks. You know, because there are a lot of people that defended Duke Nukem, and that was... I only saw gameplay videos. That thing was pretty much indefensible. I mean, yeah. You know, if you were a diehard fan and enjoyed it, great. You know, didn't say that and move on, but trying to tell other people that it's the greatest thing ever when it's a 10-year-old game, which Last Guardian is not. Any thoughts, Glace, or should I move the train along?
Choo-choo.
Okay. Next up, we have the Team Fortress 2 co-op, and I'm doing air quotes, Man versus Machine update. It's now live. It went live last night and completely walloped the Steam servers. Trust me, it took me forever to download it, and then it took me, and I never got into a game last night because the wait was too long. Things you should probably need to know are it's not net true co-op, at least not in the sense that my old fart ass sees it. There are two different types of servers you can play on to play this new horde mode, where it's you versus a bunch of machines that look just like you. One of them is a community server. You can play on that for absolutely free. The other, you have to buy a 99-cent ticket to play on. They're called the Manco servers. Now, if you do not take the quote-unquote loot at the end of your match in a Manco server, you hang on to your ticket. So theoretically, you only have to spend 99 cents once. My big issue with them, and something else I will warn you about ahead of time before you try it out, is the fact that there's no private matchmaking. You basically have to grab your buddies, put them in a party, and then take your chances with anywhere between one to five randoms, because it's six players total. I kind of really was a little disappointed with it. So there you have it. It's out. If that's your kind of thing, if you're good with jumping in with complete strangers and playing a horde mode like Gears or Firefight and Halo or any of that, it's out there and it's ready to go. Team Fortress 2 is completely free. You can get it on Steam. I talked about it in what I've been playing. At this point, after all my grumping, have I scared you off, Glacinator? Are we still going to try this out this weekend?
Well, it's a weekend before class, which usually means LAN party central. So we'll probably have a lot of people on here doing TF2 since that's free to play. So, I mean, it sounds bad, but hopefully it's not that bad.
Well, if we can get, like, you know, if we can get a spot where I can jump in with like five of you and your buddies, then yeah, it might, or, you know, whatever number, a couple three or just a, two or three of us, whatever, then that might be okay, because at least then you have maybe a better chance of surviving. You know, because you never know what five random players are going to do. And I'm not sitting here saying we're perfect angels, folks, because we're not. My favorite memory in multiplayer of all time was Glacinator screaming at me, "Get hide, run somewhere," in a Halo match, because we were so close to losing and I suck at Halo.
Oh,
you remember that episode? You remember that? That was the only time I've ever
heard.
That
was a pretty big douchebag.
That was the only time.
I'm usually not that big of a douchebag.
No, you weren't
a douchebag.
I really
wanted to win that time.
I was so proud of you, because it's like, that's what I was trying to do. And to actually hear you go, "Dude, hide." Pat was laughing his ass off, and so was I. It's like, yeah, Glacier wasn't a win this match, bad. And we did. I hid in a corner and Glacinator won it for us. He's way younger than me. I'm not even going to tell you how many in years. He's way younger than me. Of course I'm going to let him try and win it. He's got faster reflexes than I do at this point. No, I didn't. I to this day did not think you were being a douchebag. I thought you were being correct. And if you'll notice, I scuttled my little Spartan ass behind a fucking log or whatever and hid until the match was over. So there you go. That's the Team Fortress 2. That covers all old business. Now, our good friend Chris Lloyd, who you've probably seen here, there, and everywhere, especially if you live in England, but he's a good friend of the show, sent us this thing from Dorkly. And the headline is "Disappointing Video Game Facts." Now, I'm going to give you the first couple, but we're not going to go through them all. Their first one here is that the Wii series, Sports, Fit, Motion, etc., which has spanned about 6 years, has sold approximately triple the entire Legend of Zelda series, which has spanned 25 years. Now, if you scroll down here a little bit, they say the same thing again, with Link's Crossbow Training has sold more copies than Legend of Zelda's Skyward Sword. And this whole article, which I most likely will link if I don't get lazy, kind of goes on and on and on about basically old versus new. Gentlemen, and John, we'll start with you first. Is this got really bad lean from the nostalgia goggles, and we're kind of comparing apples and oranges here? You know, it's like comparing eras and anything. Like, when back from the era these games come from is so different than the what the consumer base is today. You know, that while this article is fun to read, it's kind of, you know, little unobjective, perhaps.
Yeah, it's there's some wonky numbers, like that one with the Wii Sports versus the other, you know, the Zelda. It's true, but then again, Wii Sports kind of, you know, it came with the system, sold the system, you know, kind of reinvigorated an entire, you know, generation of video game players. It's a little bit different. One of the facts that that did kind of hit me was that Metroid Prime is the number one selling Metroid game ever, but yet Luigi's Mansion, which was originally a tech demo for GameCube, according to the article here, outsold it by about 1 million copies. That's, you know, some of those kind of sting. And it's that same generation, that same, same generation, same machine. So, you know, and Metroid Prime is just so damn good. that kind of a fact is a little disappointing, but you know, they're interesting. They're cool little factoids, but I don't know if I put too much stock in all of them.
Little tinted with the retro goggles. And we'll actually get back to your point about Metroid Prime versus Luigi's. Was that Ghost Mansion? Was that the original Ghost Mansion for Cube?
Luigi's Mansion, yeah.
Yeah, Luigi's Mansion. Glacinator, do you think this is tinted with retro goggles, a little wonky, or what are your thoughts on all these facts and figures they show? And it's other stuff other than just Nintendo.
I mean, it really didn't surprise me that much at all. I mean, the reason why Wii Sports and Crossbow Training sell more is because they're more accessible to everyone. I mean, they're not specifically tailored to gamers, whereas a Zelda game is. So you're going to have more people buying a game that's for more people. It's really not that surprising. Even Luigi's Mansion didn't surprise me that much because, from what I remember, that was a launch title. So that's probably going to sell more off of that just because it's a launch title. And I really liked Luigi's Mansion. I liked it a lot more than Metroid Prime, and I'm sure a lot of other people did too. I mean, so I'm not really surprised by any of this. That's just how it is.
John, that's the other thing too, is wider appeal of audience. So when you're talking about, you know, Metroid Prime being outsold by Luigi's Mansion,
yeah,
is that more your inner hardcore gamer feeling the sting emotionally?
It definitely is. I mean. Luigi has the Mario factor. Mario sells copies. That's no surprise. Yeah, I just have a soft spot for that game because it was the first. It was one of the games that got me back into video games after a long hiatus during my university years, and because I bought a Cube and the games that came with it were Prime and Super Smash Brothers. And because I didn't have a lot of friends who were playing games at the time, so Smash Brothers kind of sat on the shelf a lot. But Prime just sucked me in big time, and I haven't really looked back. Just to go back to the crossbow training, another thing about that thing is that I think that was only a $20 game, and it also came with the Wii Zapper attachment, which is just like a plastic shell that you put your Wii remote in. But you know, that was. When crossbow training came out, people were snapping up Wii accessories like something sick. So, you know, and Skyward Sword came out at the end of the generation. So, there's a little bit of a discrepancy there between you know, comparing. I'm really comparing apples to apples so much, even though it was the same system in that case.
Well, and there's one thing in here. I think the retro goggles and change in time. You know, fuck, I hate this term. The casual market, in large part thanks to the Wii, has boomed in this generation. So some of these figures, just from a purely consumer-based standpoint, are misleading. And then you have the emotional attachment, too, which I'm sure some of the people that put this together had, too. Because there's one Mick Foley-branded cheap pop or cheap shot in here that I noticed with this, and that would be... Yeah, if I can get right back on the right browser screen. About twice as many Xbox Kinects have sold so far as Dreamcast in its entire lifespan. That sounds like a Dreamcast fanboy who should have thought the thing, you know, should have sold 87 million. Now, while the Dreamcast was a fine system indeed, there's an obvious reason why it's not around still. And it was for gamers. Kinect is not, for the last bloody time, is not just for gamers. In fact, most hardcore gamers will tell you it's a kid's toy. And so, again, while it's easy to take shots at Kinect because there's a built-in audience for it, especially if you're going to compare it to the Dreamcast, which, again, was a fine system, but it was a different era. You know, I think you have to kind of look at this article as tongue-in-cheek. And, of course, it comes from a site called Dorkly. So... I kind of think you were supposed to take it as tongue-in-cheek, to be quite honest. Glacinator, as the younger man here, so yes, I am going to run that old joke into the ground and kind of pick on you for a second. What was your emotional side of the argument and the fact that Nintendogs outsold every single DS game with the lone exception of New Super Mario Brothers?
No, I'm not surprised by that either. I like Nintendogs.
That's what I meant. So you're kind of siding with Nintendogs. Well, wait a minute. That means it outsold Animal Crossing. You're going to have to choose a side.
Don't make me do that, Bruce.
This Animal Crossing joke's the greatest thing ever. Ever since he told people I hated it. I had somebody ask me if I hated it. Who the fuck was that? Fred's roommate, maybe? Do you really hate Animal Crossing? Oh, no. Damn it. I played the game like a grand total of 3 times. How can I hate something I never probably even finished? Is that surprise you? Wasn't Nintendogs and Animal Crossing kind of the thing with the DS, with the original DS, though? That's like one of those two carts pretty much everybody had? Or am I kind of mistaken there?
I mean, they marketed the heck out of it. I mean, it wasn't a launch title. The main launch title was Super Mario 64 DS. But I think Nintendogs was the first major release for the DS besides Mario Kart DS.
Ah, so...
So that goes along the same argument of Luigi's Mansion being selling more because it's the launch title.
Ah, so Super Mario... Well, and plus it was Super Mario. You can't expect... You know, if it's Super Mario and it's a launch title, you gotta expect that it's gonna go batshit, you know? Especially if it's a good Super Mario. John, you're more of a hardcore gamer. Yeah, now I'm gonna pick on you. Do you have, for the DS, either Animal Crossing... Or Nintendogs, or both.
I have Animal Crossing and 2 copies of Nintendogs, I believe.
Oh, well, my goodness.
Well, isn't one of those basically, though, Peter's copy? Isn't Peter now playing the Nintendogs occasionally?
No. Well, when I bought Wanda a DS, it came with... It was like the Nintendog special edition. It was kind of my hook. It was kind of my hook to get Wanda into games a little bit at the time. So I was a bit sneaky that way. The second copy came when. What the hell did I buy that? It was the best of edition, the gold edition for some. What the hell did I buy that? It might have been just so we could. Because we both had a DS, and rather than sharing the same cart, we wanted to have each other our own dogs. Maybe I want to say I really don't recall, but I mean I can tell you that we don't play them anymore, except for when Peter wants to play it. And I do have a copy of the 3DS Nintendogs only because my 3DS came with it.
Yeah, I'm quite impressed with your wife. From Nintendogs as a beginning to Overlord and Oblivion. Casual games can do good, you hardcore bastards.
Yeah, there's Fable in there. She likes Mario Kart Double Dash. I mean, I could go on for a while of the games. Like, there's a whole timeline of how I got her from you know the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon from Nintendogs, as you said, to Oblivion. There's definitely a full pattern there.
Well, my point in bringing it up. Partially because I think your wife's cool for that transition. I think that happens more than people realize. And we could probably do a discussion topic on the fact that casual games are gateway games. Yeah, I know. Gateway drugs, gateway games. I know. It's kind of a cheesy fucking way to go with it. But I've seen plenty of people who just started out playing mindless games, Facebook games, casual titles, and then want more and start to step up. As they find they have a passion for it, or they like it, you know. But I think it's something as hardcore gamers we dismiss too often. You got to start somewhere, you know. We didn't all start playing the hardest games of our generation right out of the box, you know. I played a shitload of Ladybug on the ColecoVision before I moved on to something else. So we appreciate it, Chris, as always, that you sent us in this little article. I will most likely, like I said, and I'm saying most likely, mostly because I might forget, because I'm like that. The final thing, and I'm not sure how much discussion we'll get out of it. Well, it might not even be the final thing we'll talk about. Just something that, I guess, in not so shocking news, Halo 4 is going to have a DLC pass for multiplayer maps. Now, before you get really super panicky, you can get this in the Forward Unto Dawn Special Edition, which brings you a bunch of crap. But you can also get just the online pass, which will be for all the multiplayer maps. Crap. And some other stuff. But the simple fact that there is an online pass in Halo, because now Microsoft's studio is in charge of it, will you move past the question, is this surprising or not? I guess the only question I'm going to ask, and Glace, we'll start with you since you're the Halo first-person shooter fan. Is Bungie the only good-hearted studio slash first-person shooter developer left?
It seems
is
like
that
it.
Is that what we're looking at?
Not going to lie, it definitely seems like it.
Are you a little bit...
Yeah.
What was your emotion when you... Well, tell the audience the story you told about GameStop.
Yeah, we were talking in the pre-show, and I was talking how I went to GameStop today so I could reserve Assassin's Creed 3 and Halo 4. And when I was going to reserve Halo 4, they're like, are you sure you don't want to buy the Super Special Edition? You can get a Master Chief movie, and you can get 3 armor unlocks, and you can get a hat for your avatar, and you can get a map pack online thing. I'm like, what do you mean map pack online thing? What does that have to do with anything? It's like, oh, it's like Battlefield or Call of Duty, where you get a pass and you get all the map packs for the rest of the time that they're out, or how many they release. And I asked how much more it was, and it's $40 more to get the special edition as opposed to the normal game, which is $60. So you're paying $100 for some extra stuff plus all the map packs. And I didn't buy it. I bought the normal $60 game. And the reason why I did that is because with Halo Reach, I didn't even buy all the map packs. I maybe bought 2 map packs, and then I really stopped playing it intensely, and I sort of wavered off of it, and I never really got around to getting the last map pack. So if you're going to go reserve, any listeners, if you're going to go reserve Halo 4 and you don't really think you're going to get all the map packs, it'd probably be better for you to just stick with getting the $60 unless you want all the map packs plus a bunch of crap. So PSA for all of you people out there.
So what was your emotional state as a Halo fan? Never
having... emotional state, I was like, oh gosh, not this again.
Apathy, or not so much apathy, it's just...
if I wasn't a nice person, I would have rolled my eyes at him. But I'm a nice person.
He is a nice person. Barring the Halo ordering around story earlier, he really is a nice person. And again, for the record, I needed to be ordered around. John, is the more not hardcore first-person shooter player, are you in agreement with us that maybe Bungie's the only nice or good-hearted studio slash publisher slash God knows what left?
Maybe it's I mean, I guess you mean that their game is not going to have an online pass. Is that why you're saying that they're so kind-hearted?
Well, no, their versions of Halo never really did. There might have been a map. There might have been a map pack group you could buy after all the map packs came out. I think Halo Reach had something like that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, as far as I know, and Glacinator can holler no if I'm wrong, there's been nothing like this in Halo previously.
Yeah, well, I mean, though I think some of that might be just because of the times. I mean, someone had to do it first, and when it turned out to be successful and a moneymaker, then it's not really that surprising that everybody else is falling in line. I don't know whenever Bungie's next project comes out, and if it's a first-person shooter with online multiplayer, isn't not going to be the same thing? I don't know.
Well, that's the other thing. It may shatter the illusion. of Bungie being this awesome studio, you know, because their servers always work first day out of the box. You know, you don't have the issues like you did with everybody else, you know, the lag, the not being able to get in as a party. Glace, actually, John just brings up a good point. Bungie's next title is going to be, who the fuck's publishing it? Is it Activision? Shit. I think it's Activision is their new publisher. How shocked would you be if they went the online pass route with a different publisher?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Activision, but I really do like Bungie a lot. And I think if they're smart, they will try to not do that at whatever the cost.
Well, theirs is a publishing-only deal. They own everything, much like the deal Respawn got with EA. So I'm kind of hoping to have more creative control. And that, John, you bring up an excellent point, because that will be the tail of the tape. Mm-hmm. Ubisoft started this bullshit pass stuff. EA copied them. Everybody else is copying them, but EA is catching flack for copying because it's the cultural thing, as I keep yammering on about the bash on EA. Because this thing's gone below the radar. I've seen two stories about it. And it's like, oh, there's a Halo pass. Hey, give us some money. You know, the Halo fans are throwing money at the screen, hoping it'll absorb and go to Microsoft. You know? Mm-hmm. So there is some cultural tie-ins to this. But you bring up a very good point, and it'll be interesting to watch. Because I think Respawn would feel the same way. I think Respawn, you know, West and Zampella got really tired of the way Activision was monetizing and the business cycle, which you can't do much about. In fact, we could have done another story about one of the guys from DICE talking about you know, you guys need to make games fun. Don't worry about the business cycle. Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive anymore. So there you go. Halo's gonna have an online pass. First one without Bungie. Who's shocked? I'm not. Anything else, guys?
John? I don't think so.
Did you see anything else this week? Oh, did you see the fake PSN hack that was flying around Twitter at about 3,000 miles an hour?
A friend of mine mentioned something on Facebook about it, but I didn't. I was looking at it on my phone, and I wasn't able to click the link. So, yeah, I looked on Joystick after just to see if anything was on the go, and no, sir. I guess it was a fake.
That is one of the good things yet bad things about Twitter, which I'll expand on that point in a second. Glacinator, as somebody who doesn't use Twitter in the same way John and I do, did you hear anything about this PSN hack that was later proved to be false at all?
Nope.
See, and that's the good thing versus bad thing, let me say that again. Good thing / bad thing about Twitter. It took off as a firestorm. Some douchebag from Anonymous, oh, we've hacked into Sony again, here's all the stuff we took. Took about an hour for somebody to figure out the stuff this guy was claiming they took was like from March. And so it was baloney. And then, of course, Sony came out, this, that, and the other thing. But stuff with Twitter is so instantaneous that you're going to know about it. And then the panic's going to ensue. Whereas Glacinator Moore is a Facebook guy, you know, the social media like that. People occasionally fact check before they start put links on Facebook or before they put blog posts on Facebook. So it got passed around Twitter like a wildfire. Did you have heart palpitations momentarily before you found out it was false?
I had to have a quick look immediately to see what was going on. I'll admit I was pretty relieved when I saw that there was nothing going on.
Anything else in the gaming world, Glacinator, you saw or you want to talk about or whatever this week? Did you see anything that interested you?
Anything that I would want to talk about would be about the game that must not be named. So I will spare.
What is it specifically that you wanted to talk about?
They are adding. I'm not sure what the guy's name is, but one of the new guys at Mojang is adding new stuff, and it looks really cool. Such as stone walls. They're like fences, but they're walls made out of stone, and a new redstone block that looks like it's made out of potted plants. I don't, It's very really? Odd stuff, but it looks interesting.
Let me ask you something. So is it, there was no snapshot this week, which it took my dumb ass a long time to figure out that the snapshot's actually something you could download and play, because I'm an idiot. I'm having enough problems running vanilla. I'm not fucking with anything else. Is this something that you're looking forward to, or would you rather they fix the resource problems first?
They should definitely fix all the lag. That should be number one issue right there.
According to good
number
old,
one priority.
According to good old Matt, it's memory leaks in the source code, and that can't be good.
Oh, my.
Is this a new guy?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I just checked the update.
Oh, and here is the picture, I think, in the post. Oh, wait, that's the wrong place. Whoops. I don't even know who I just sent that to. Uh-oh. There it is.
Oh, okay, so I'm looking at a photo, folks. I apologize. Oh, wow. That does actually kind of look cool. Huh.
I have no idea what it is. It's just like, I mean, basically what I'm looking at to describe to you is small cubes with each of the different sort of plants in the game on it with paintings of different items in the background. It's very odd.
And this is for a future update?
Yes.
Cool. Okay, so is there anything else about the game we no longer mention, or was that just the neat little thing you
saw? No, I'll spare everyone else.
Okay.
Anything else?
I can't really think of anything either. Oh, I did find out the boats do not last quite as long as I thought they did. They're nice that you can take away and pack them, but they should be like mine carts that don't ever destroy.
Mm-hmm.
You good over there, John?
What's
Oh, wait. Oculus Rift. Hey, in late breaking news. Nice. John just popped this in, and we talked about Oculus Rift, the VR gaming goggles, last week. Oculus Rift will cater to those who wear glasses. Will it fit over my glasses? The short answer is no, it won't. The much longer, more positive answer is that even those with impaired vision will be able to use Oculus Rift when it's finally available to consumers. While the unit won't fit over your eyeglasses, creator Palmer Luckey tells us it would put the headset out too far away from the user's face. It will have adjustable optics. Exactly how these will be implemented hasn't been finalized, though two possibilities include binocular-like dial adjustments or special optical inserts. The only impairment that could be problematic, says Palmer, is in cases of severe astigmatisms, though that may be correctable via software. In other words, years of destroying your eyes by sitting too close to the screen won't stop you from strapping this directly to your face. Well, they debunked years ago that sitting too close to the TV hurts your eyes. So are you hopeful, John, that it will work without you wearing your glasses?
Yeah.
That's what they're saying?
That makes it sound a lot more appealing to me, that's for sure. I mean, that would have been my biggest complaint, is that I couldn't use it just because I had glasses on my face, and if I didn't already own a pair of contact lenses. But I think that's really cool that they're going to be able to allow you to adjust the focus, so to speak. I guess is basically what they're saying, so you can see. That's really cool to me.
That is, and actually, it's definitely a major concern for you. But that brings up a different question for you, Glaze, because you said you could use it, since it's going to have to be so close to your face, you could use it without your glasses. Do you think you'll be able to use it just normally, or will the dial-o-matic help you out as well?
Like I said last time, I think that the screen will be close enough to my face that it won't be that much of a problem, since I'm nearsighted. And I think that this dial thing will only help more.
Well, I suspect it'll help for everybody. Just to get it like dialed in, so it's perfect for your specific set of eyes, whether you have vision problems or not. Mm-hmm. My vision is starting to get a little bit less than perfect, but it's I'm not yet ready to have to wear glasses. So I'm sure I could probably dial it in a little bit too. That's very cool that they're going to do that. I'm now getting a little bit more excited for this game. I won't say hi or this device. I won't say hyped, but I will say excited. We'll have to keep updating this, John, because they talked about in there too some like lenses or something that you'd have to stick in as well. Mm-hmm. You know, if for certain vision problems. But if they're basically saying that a severe astigmatism is the only thing that's going to keep you from enjoying this game or enjoying this thing, I'm thinking you're probably in pretty good shape there.
It certainly seems like it, yeah.
Well, just like we do with a lot of other things, we'll update it and see what happens. But for now, I think we've done enough show for the show. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to update Skype. If you'd like to listen to this podcast, we have a number of ways you can do that. And I know this seems silly that I'm telling you this while you're listening to the podcast, but bear with me, because then you can tell your friends. iTunes, it's one way to do it. Give us a rating. Love us, hate us, meh. We host this thing at archive.org. Most weeks you can find it easily when I'm not screwing up freaking posting it. How do you know all this? Well, there's an easy way you can find out all of this stuff. We have a Facebook. It's called WonderPod Online. All one word. That's right. We're real original here. In fact, we're so original, we have a website that's called WonderPodOnline.com. You can also find the podcast there. But the neat thing about finding the podcast there is there's an embedded player for your use if you don't want to junk up your hard drive with MP3s. Let's see. There's also a great bunch of posts there. Glacinator posts there. John posts there. I went video crazy this week. I'm actually probably going to be doing that in the next couple, 3 weeks. I got a lot of stuff I wanted to do. We have Gunsage always writing something awesome. Uncle G, Audio Master G, one of the G's, is doing wrestling stuff. All kinds of things. Patman and his iPhone games. So check out our website. It's WonderPodOnline.com. We have a YouTube channel where I host the videos. So if you don't want to go to the site, you just go to YouTube, look for WonderPod Online or 36Wii or Glacinator's channel. And if none of that works for you because I'm getting tired of going through this 3,000 miles an hour, we have an email address. It is WonderPodOnline@gmail.com. WonderPodOnline@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at WonderPodOnline. Or you can follow me on Twitter at ORIGIM. Or you can follow John on Twitter
at John Keogh, JONKEHOE.
Until episode 124, I am Bruce McGee. I'm off to meditate with Gnarl. See you, people.
Cheers.
Goodbye.